You're listening to Shooting Hoops with your hosts, Dia Miller and Adam Drexler.
Welcome back to Shooting Hoops, a podcast about basketball and the Portland Trailblazers. I'm Dia Miller. I'm here with my co-host, Adam Drexler. This is episode 12. We are just moving along, I think. Maybe it's 13. I've lost track.
I've lost count, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think we're past the point of saying what episode it is. We're just here. We are again. you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Obviously, with YouTube, you're getting a little bit of extra. You get to see our faces and our reactions. You also get to see some tweets and some videos. But hopefully it's also an enjoyable experience listening on a podcast platform. Adam, how are you? How are things going?
I'm good. I'm back from New York.
And, yeah.
Wonderful experience. I was there for Fashion Week.
That's exciting. So
I got to just be a fan and spectate and see all the weird stuff that goes on. And and then afterwards, I decided to change up my own fashion and I shaved my beard off.
Yeah, it looks good. Is it weird?
Yeah, I had some facial hair, but like now I'm like, I don't know, I'm baby faced now. So
is that, obviously as a woman, like I would equate that to like getting a haircut maybe. Is that kind of?
Yeah, it's like my face is all of a sudden cold now. And like before I just had like facial hair blocking all kinds of wind and whatever.
I actually have wondered about that because I don't like to be hot and sweaty, and especially like when I played sports and stuff. So whenever I watch, I always think about this with James Harden. Every time I see James Harden playing and he's got that big old beard on his face, I always think like that has got to be hot and uncomfortable. So I'm glad to know that it is.
It's okay in terms of basketball. It's actually like pretty convenient because the beard will like take the sweat instead of it like dripping and like falling everywhere, it just kind of stays there. So like
it's like James eyebrows has a huge for your neck.
Beard. Yeah. So it's like it's like a quick little towel. But like
which
mine wasn't big enough to be a towel. James Harden, his is just that's a lot of towel to work with. So
yeah. Man, well, we are coming into, we just finished the All-Star weekend, so we're kind of in that little All-Star break right now where there's no games. We're just kind of sitting tight, and we are currently, let's show this here. We are currently 12th in the West, and by we, I mean the Trailblazers. Adam and I are not actually on this team, but you know, I like to pretend I am sometimes. We're 12th in the West, 28-30, which again is, it's such a tight, the top, obviously the Nuggets are 41-18. They're like way above the pack there, but the rest of them are really, especially once you get into like, you know, fifth and sixth, we're not that far behind where they're at. It's still a pretty tight conference. We're still, we're still pretty close here.
Yeah, I think it's anybody's game. Or rather, it's anybody's chance to make the playoffs.
Right.
Unless you're the Rockets or the Spurs at this point. But everyone else, it seems to be a pretty tight competition, which is good news for basketball. Because you get to see more competitive games.
For sure. Yeah, I think it's just been this kind of weird, like, everybody's really close. And there's still, like, a lot of teams can still make a run. It's not over at this point. I think sometimes we get to this point in the season and there's a pretty clear picture of where the teams are going to be. But honestly, like, it's still kind of up for grabs.
Yeah, and with, like, after the trade deadline, it's always interesting to see because some teams will all of a sudden turn around and really decline, whereas some teams that were on the lower half will actually get a lot better and finish out the season stronger than they did to start. So it's interesting to see.
It really is. And speaking of trade deadline, I did not put this tweet in here, so I guess I'm just going to read it. But speaking of trade deadline, the Blazers, this was a wild ride for Blazer fans who are kind of used to the trade line coming and just moving on past without a whole lot of movement. That was not the case this year. I don't think the trade deadline had happened last time we recorded. Had it?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, so there have been some moves.
There have been some moves. So I know for me, I was working the day of the trade deadline, and I was in the studio at ESPN, and I was watching this go down with all the analysts there. You know, they've got, I don't know, 20 different analysts that are all there. They're all on their phones. They're all getting notifications. And the way that this would happen is a notification would come through. You'd hear the sound, but because of how things are recorded, you can't always hear like the actual trade that was going through. So I'm hearing, oh, there's a trade. And then I'm like trying to figure out what it is as they're talking about it. It was chaos. But the Blazers did make some moves. So here's where we're at. As of the trade deadline, we traded Josh Hart, Gary Payton II, a 2029 second rounder. And in return, we got Cam Reddish, Matisse Thybulle. I think we did talk about this briefly because I couldn't say his name the last time we talked about this. So I may have just repeated a story I told on the last podcast. But Ryan
Avocado.
It's definitely not that. I always feel the worst when I can't get names right. Like I try so hard, but I definitely butchered it. So Ryan, I you won't ever hear this, but I apologize anyway. Kevin Knox, 5 second rounders from Golden State, a protected 2023 Knicks first round pick. So we lose Gary Payton, we lose Josh Hart, but we gained some decent firepower here. We talked about this briefly last time, but what we didn't talk about was the drama that unfolded after the fact with Gary Payton. The second, I always shorten it and just call him Gary Payton, but I probably shouldn't because, you know, his dad actually did play. So with Gary Payton, the second, there was some drama. There was some drama. So
yeah, it was blowing up on Twitter. Your words were
it
said.
It was blowing. Yes. Words were said. So let me try to just break it down. For those of you who haven't been following what's happening, the short version is, when Gary Payton came to the Blazers, he had an injury. We knew that that was part of the package. He was injured at Golden State. When they traded him, they were aware of those injuries. He pretty quickly had surgery, a similar surgery to the one that Dame had on his abdominal area. And, you know, has been in the process of recovering, which we know is not a short recovery. And in that process was just barely at the place where he was starting to have minutes back with the team. When this trade was made, it was, I believe it was like the day after we had just played Golden State and Gary had played in that game. And when they went to make this trade, part of the process is that there are physicals that the players go through. And the player, Gary, went through a physical, and he didn't pass the physical. And Golden State acted shocked and confused. like, what the heck? He's not totally healthy. I don't understand. And then it went a step further, and they started accusing Portland of giving him a specific kind of shot to help him get back to, like, basically to push through the pain and play games anyway, was their accusation. Come to find out that that was not in fact what was going on. They had given him I believe it's the same medication, but in pill form, which is essentially similar to giving like an extra strength Advil or something along those lines, to help with pain management, which is obviously a normal part of coming off of an injury and a surgery and a recovery. But then taking it a step further, Golden State accused Portland of, you know, withholding crucial information, and then took it even a step further and said, not only do we want an investigation done against Portland with this trade, but we also think you should look into the trade with Larry Nance Jr. and New Orleans. So Golden State kind of came for Portland. And in the meantime, you know, the rumors are swirling that Gary doesn't really want to be in Portland. He really wanted to be back in Golden State. You know, the players aren't really saying anything. Gary's not really saying anything. And everybody is just losing their minds And you know how Portland fans are. They love you until they feel like you did them wrong, and then you are dead to them. So at this point, Gary is basically dead to Portland fans due to all of the drama and speculation that is swirling amongst the internet. So that is the short version. Adam, give me your two cents. You've got it, again, a unique perspective here. So
it's sad to see because, I mean, Gary, he's a good player. He's an underdog, and, you know, him with his career, the road it took him to get to this point has been an amazing journey. And it's weird that any fan would feel any kind of disdain towards him. It's not like he tricked anybody. It's sports. Right. Injuries happen, and sometimes it takes people longer to heal from an injury than, you know, it says on Wikipedia. Right. And it's just
pop the band-aid on it.
Yeah, I mean, every human being is different, so some people heal, you know, in a short amount of time. Some people take longer. Sometimes something along the way, along the road to recovery, oftentimes in sports, something else will kind of break down because they're compensating for it. So In terms of that, Golden State knew exactly who he was and that he was injured. It's no secret. Everyone's known that. He hasn't played that many games with Portland. So Golden State acting surprised when he's not 100% is weird. But also, it's not really all the way them. It's also, you have doctors that are, you know, mandated to check people up, and they're mandated to give their full assessment. Even if Golden State knows what they're doing, it's the formality of it.
Right.
But yeah, no, I don't think Portland fans should have any grievances towards GP. Yeah. You know, I think he would have loved to have given 110%. He just wasn't healthy. So
yeah,
I can't blame anyone for that.
I think there's a lot of things that can be true all at once here. Sometimes we have situations like that where it's really just not a black and white situation. And to me, looking at the situation, obviously from the outside, I think there's a few factors. I think, first of all, you're entirely right with the whole process of healing and the doctors and all that stuff. And also, healing isn't always linear. Sometimes, you know, it's one step forward, two steps back, three steps forward, one step back. And there's just because he plays in a game doesn't mean that he's fully ready to be out there playing every single game again. So I think that can be true. I think that, you know, there's been a lot of criticism where people are basically, Portland fans are basically saying, look, Gary signed this whole big contract with us. We gave him this huge contract and he used us to get that contract and just be back in Golden State where he wanted to be all along. And you know what? Maybe that's true. Let's just go with that. Let's play devil's advocate here and say that that's true. That Gary used Portland to get a big contract and go back to Golden State. Let's just say that's true. So what? Good for him. It's a business. This is a business. And at the end of the day, Gary is making business decisions. And the fact of the matter that I feel like people keep forgetting is, yeah, we signed him to a huge contract. We signed him to a huge contract that we aren't paying. We're not paying his contract anymore. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not mistaken there. Like, once he goes back to Golden State, now that's their responsibility.
Yeah. So with that, it's, to me, I don't understand. The people are acting like it's their money that gets spent.
Right. It's not even Portland. All,
it's the NBA. Teams have to sign people to their roster. They have to.
Right.
And on paper, that was the right move to make at the time. Yeah, a lot of other teams probably wanted to sign him to a deal. And as a player, you, if unless you're a superstar, you go where the money is.
Absolutely.
So
there's no fault in that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the difference between you want to re-sign with Golden State for the veteran minimum, or you want to sign with a team that's going to pay you more. It's the obvious choice, unless you're a player who's, you know, made enough money in their career to where you don't have to do anything. It's a business. So I don't think anyone should get mad at that.
And the truth is, if really where he wants to be is Golden State, then let him go back to Golden State. That's where he should. To me, I don't want to try to get players to buy in that aren't in. if that's where he wants to be, then that's where he should be. And it's not like, you know, Portland may have signed that contract, but they're not, we're not being penalized. Like, it's not like while he's playing at Golden State, now we're left with the bill. That's not how this works. That frees up space for us to then put, you know, to put that money somewhere else. So it's not like, yeah, there's this big contract that was signed, but Portland's not left with it. We're not paying it. So it is, am I mistaken?
No, it's, you know, the contract is transferred over. Now Golden State takes up the contract. So, I mean, it's, and at the end of the day, it's not like Portland just broke the salary cap doing that. No. It's very standard. It also, as far as the giving him a Advil, I mean, it's, this is the NBA. No team is going to force a player to play. It typically doesn't happen in the NBA. If a player says they can't go, most organizations, like 99.9% of the time, will, you know, respect their decision. In the case of Gary Payton, if he wants to play, that was entirely his decision. If he wants to take an Advil for pain, that's like, the staff is there to help you do what you want to do, which is, if you want to play, they're there to help you try to play. If you're if you're not trying to play, they'll sit you down.
Right.
So and this is not overseas or something where you have to play. Or you, this
and
is
they're not
NBA.
And both, you know, Josh Hart came out and made a comment about the on his own. It was unsolicited. Once he was already with the Knicks, after his media availability, he asked if he could make a comment, and he basically, of his own free will, said, you know, Portland has handled things well. Everything was on the up and up. You know, he made the point to say that Dame also had an appearance on Chris Haynes' new podcast, and he spoke about that as well and said, you know, that the medical staff that they have is really great, that they're not going to push them when they're not ready to go. You know, the truth of the matter is, I think people are way more emotional about this than maybe is warranted. I get it, because I too was a big Gary Payton Jr. or Gary Payton II fan. I really wanted him on the team. I was thrilled when we got him. I was so excited to see him start playing. But the truth of the matter is, like, I wish him well wherever he goes. You know, he made a decision that was best for him. At the end of the day, it really doesn't leave that much of an impact on the Blazers. They're not left paying his salary, one. So that doesn't leave a huge impact. And two, he didn't play that much with the team. So it's not like we're really going to, I don't feel like we're going to feel that heavily, because he wasn't really playing with the team enough to leave a lasting impression yet.
As far as like his value, I think right now, and like that probably really hurt the Blazers in terms of that they could really use him now, because I mean, they traded away two veteran players at that position who are solid and on the uptrend, and got two players that have kind of been on the downtrend in their career. So it's kind of weird. I'm not saying that they can't turn it around, or they're young. So they have a lot of time, and, you know, the future looks bright for them. But in terms of having players who are ready to contribute right now at a high level, GP and Josh Hart were two of those players. So I really thought that Portland would kind of make a better move than that, because I mean, that wasn't a move upwards. I don't think that was just kind of, it was
linear
mid, if not lower. It's Josh Hart. There's so almost every team in the NBA wants a guy like Josh Hart. So I think that was just a weird trade, but I get it. They had to make some kind of move. People were demanding change. So
I anticipate that this is a part of a bigger plan. I think that they have had a long-term, you know, maybe a couple years here of a plan that they've been working towards since this new management took over. I think that this summer coming up is going to be the biggest tell. I think if some big pieces don't fall in place this summer, then that's when we start to panic. And by panic, I mean, you know, continue to root for the same team and hope they win. But, you know, I think if some big pieces don't fall by this summer, then we have that discussion. But I think that this is part of something bigger. I think they're looking at the season and where we stand right now and realizing we are not going to win a championship this summer. We may not even make it this season. We may not even make it to the playoffs at this point. So let's instead of pushing for, you know, right now and possibly making short-sighted moves to get there, let's look ahead and do some things that will help us as we move ahead. Josh Hart's contract was expiring, so it's possible that he didn't stay with the team. Obviously, there were issues with Gary, so there, you know, there may be things there that we didn't understand or didn't know. He may have not wanted to stay, or there may have been bigger injury issues than we were aware of. We're not sure there, but I do think that the Cam Reddish and Matisse Thybulle are decent pickups. I think we were able to retain Dame, Anthony Simons, and Jeremy Grant, all of which are 20-point-plus shooters. And then with that, we gained defensive skill. You know, Matisse is top-tier defense. He has not been huge offensively, but with those three, we maybe don't necessarily need that offensive power as much. And Cam Reddish is somebody who I think has potential. He just hasn't been consistent. And sometimes all you need for that is the right fit. So I'm really hopeful that Cam will kind of find his groove here and build some consistency. And I think Matisse will be great defensively. We've already seen that. In fact, let's run this here real quick.
Reaction that normally that's a flyby, but Beasley just kept into the act and
I will just swatch that one
well into the stands.
By the way, it's a welcome back to the Northwest
for a smile.
He's a UW product.
So what's going on there for those of you watching or listening on the podcast? This was a big block that Matisse had when we played. Was that the Lakers? I think that was when we played the Lakers. And I was too busy watching the ball flying into the stands. And I think, you know, I think he's somebody who's going to be really good defensively. And we've seen him actually do well offensively too. And again, sometimes it's just being in the right place and having the right fit and feeling confident enough to be able to do the things that you have the ability to do. So hopefully those two end up being good. But all the picks we got with Gary, it would not surprise me at all if this summer those picks are used, especially with Nurk. They've been vocal about possibly trading Nurk. And I don't know where that stands now after these moves have been made, but it would not surprise me if this summer they try to package something around Nurk and some of those picks. Those are valuable assets. You know, we're coming off of Neil basically trading away all our assets and us having nothing to really bargain with. So even though right now it looks frustrating, this summer that could translate into some moves.
Yeah. And it all depends on what happens kind of with the roster. And also it depends on, you know, this core right now staying healthy. So I think we'll see. We'll have to wait and see. As for this season, it's going to be tough, but it's not impossible to make the play in. It really just depends on how good of a mesh this is. But just to go back real quick, I think Gary Payton did. I mean, who doesn't want to go back to the team they won a championship with and what they're familiar with?
It took a chance on you, brought you back from the G League.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think there's. It's not like he was just like, oh, I can't stand Portland. Get me out of here. I think he was legitimately thinking, okay, this team paid me.
Right.
You know, they gave me a shot. I want to play. It's just his body wouldn't let him.
Yeah.
And, you know, we never know what goes down. But in terms of the organization, the Blazers don't ever, in my opinion, they're like amongst probably one of the best in terms of how they treat their players and respecting their players. And also you have Chauncey, who is actually a really good friend of, you know, Gary Payton Sr.
Right.
So
that's a good point.
I don't think there was any bad blood per se.
Right.
I just think it just wasn't the right situation at the right time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it's so easy, you know, especially as fans, for us to just pick up one little piece of information and just roll with it and speculate and whatever, you know. And even things like, I saw a lot of comments about how everybody was like, all the players were, you know, saying goodbye to Josh Hart, but nobody said anything about Gary. I didn't really see a lot of them say anything about Greg Brown, who they released either.
I'm sure they missed them and talked to them.
Well, and I'm sure, yeah, you forget sometimes. I mean, we went through this with your dad. Like, you forget about the things that happen off of social media, and you forget about the relationships that happen behind closed doors. And regardless, I think always you err on the side of giving the benefit of the doubt. And and we may be wrong. Maybe it was a whole big dramatic housewives situation. We don't know. But the likelihood is that this is really a lot more straightforward and less dramatic than it's being made to be. If anything, the dramatics are the teams that are bickering at each other and accusing each other of things. So, you know, I wish Gary the best. I hope he really plays well with Golden State, but not so well that they beat us. Okay, so moving on, let's talk about All-Star Weekend. We are coming off All-Star Weekend. There's a lot to talk about here. First of all, you know, we have obviously Damian Lillard, who just kind of dominated. He won the three-point contest, which was so cool to see. He's been a part of that before, but he hasn't won it. So it was really cool to see him win that, especially with how he's playing right now. So well deserved. Just really, it was kind of exciting to watch and, you know, see him win that.
Yeah, it's weird. The shift in the All-Star is that now the three-point contest is the biggest event, almost bigger than the game, because no one really cares about the dunk competition anymore, aside from, you know, it was a spectacle this year, I guess.
We got to talk about that.
Yeah.
We got to talk about the dunk contest, but go ahead with your three-point contest.
Yeah, the three-point contest is now, like, especially in today's NBA, it's kind of become the pinnacle of entertainment for the All-Star Weekend. We want to see all these great shooters. And, I love how they incorporated further shots and all that stuff, because that's what players are doing now. So
it was fun to watch. Dame did that well. Dame did that well. He hit almost all of those shots. I think he maybe missed one. But the announcers were joking about how it was really too close for him, that they should have moved it back. I saw some tweets about, like, he should have put his money ball cart on the logo, like, just, you know, some fun things like that, which are always really cool to see, you know, that kind of support for Dame. But we have to talk for a second about the three-point contest the dunk contest. And this is why I'm going away from the Trailblazers for a second and going into my side of things here. But when the dunk contest was announced, obviously Shaedon Sharpe was originally set to participate in that and pulled out for, you know, to focus on the second half of the season, which I totally get. I don't think I did go back to the Blazers. Whoops. But I think, you know, again, rumors flying about how he was slighted for the Rising Stars. I don't think it had anything to do with that. I think what's likely is that he maybe didn't even want to be in it in the first place and got convinced into doing it. Or, you know, Shaedon has been a very shy, kind of introverted guy. He's not a super flashy, he plays flashy, but he's not somebody who seems to want to be all up in the public eye. I think also when you've got a guy like that, who's looking at the second half of the season and looking at the changes that have been made and seeing that he's going to need to really step up, coming out for a one-day event, you know, if he had been part of the Rising Stars game, it might have been worth that trip. But with just that one event, it really wasn't probably worth that.
Especially not the dunk competition.
There
was a time when I used to dream of being in the dunk competition, but those days have passed. It's just because now you have people who – well, before, the dunk competition was judged by some of the best dunkers to ever play the game. So, I mean, they have kind of set the bar. So they're the ones who are pretty good at judging.
Yeah.
Now the dunk competition is judged by some people who I don't think can even dunk. I mean, it's weird. And then you have people who were not known as career dunkers, like Jamal Crawford, you know, Carl Malone. I think those are weird people to have judge a competition when they're like, get Dr. J, who get Dominique Wilkins, get Vince Carter, get Dunkers, get Blake Griffin. I don't know. Right. I mean, there's so many people you can get. You can Nate Robinson, Dwight Howard. I think all of those would be really fun and make it more of a spectacle and just give the competition some life.
Yeah.
But I guess they went the opposite, and now they're picking guys out of the G League to be in a dunk competition.
But see, now we got to talk about this, because this is why, this is, you know how I feel about the G League. This is why I got excited, because when the dunk contest was announced, Mac McClung was announced as a participant. And at the time that this was announced, he was playing for the G League. And I immediately was thrilled, because, you know, I'm all about getting those guys more exposure, like doing more overlap. I think there are some guys in the G League that really deserve to be on an NBA roster. I think a lot of, I mean, we've talked about this. There's fit issues. There's things like that. I love that crossover and that exposure. And so I was thrilled. And I know Mac. I've worked with him several times. I've shot him, you know, when he was playing with South Bay Lakers. I shot him for Team USA. He's somebody that I've worked with and shot a lot. And I was just immediately very, that's not what I wanted to show. I was just immediately very excited about this. I have seen Mac firsthand put up dunk after, and something that needs to be said is Mac is not tall. He's
very short.
I want to say maybe around 6 feet tall. I should have looked at
exactly on a good day.
He's not a tall guy. And you watch, he dunks like he is 7 feet tall.
Yeah, and actually, I have watched. I'm a huge fan of him. I actually really do love his game. He's flashy. He's one of the flashier players.
Yeah,
I think, and he's fun to watch.
He really is.
And obviously, knowing that he's a high flyer, I'm like, obviously, I want to see somebody like that in the dunk competition. It's just, I wish that the NBA would kind of reward these players and give them incentives to be in the dunk contest, so we can have more people like him participate who are really entertaining dunkers, instead of just getting, you know, it's almost like a, hey, guys, who wants to volunteer to be in the dunk contest? Right. I know it's coming up. We got to have somebody. It just seems like a burden.
I think, again, two things can be true. It's another one of those situations where I agree with you. I think there should be more incentive. I think that there should be more, you know, I mean, there were days where your dad was in the dunk contest. Like we were seeing the stars of the NBA competing in these competitions. Whereas now we're seeing a lot of rookies, a lot of, you know, first, second, third year guys that aren't as well known. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, especially if they're really good dunkers. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I definitely think that there should be something incentivized. You know what I would like to see? I would like to see, and these, if you're watching on YouTube, you're getting to see some of the pictures I've taken of Mac dunking. Or in the process of dunks. He's somebody that, I'll get back to what I want to see in a second, but I want to go back to Mac. He's somebody that has been doing this since high school. You know, he was really well known with Ball Is Life and some of those platforms. He's been well known for his dunking skills. And I think it was really, really cool that he was able to have this platform. He is now known. People know who he is that did not know who he was coming into this weekend. He's also been signed to the 76ers. So he is technically now in the NBA when this all took place. But it's just, it's one of those things. So here's what I would like to see going forward with these competitions, with the dunk contest, the three-point contest, even the skills challenge. You know, they have these three teams, these three skill challenge teams. You know what I would like to see? I would like to see them, I feel like this would make it more competitive. I would like to see them split this up into three groups, three teams, and have a team that is, you could do this a couple different ways. You could do like a team of G League. You could do a team of vets. You could do a team of retired players. How cool would that be to bring back some of these guys? Like, some of these guys.
I don't know. I don't know if they could win it like that.
maybe not, and maybe they wouldn't. But and so maybe that's not the category you go for. But you know, but to have these broken down into like, okay, so let's bring in the young guys, let's bring in the veterans, let's bring in the superstars, let's bring in whatever. I would love to see some of that. I love to see the overlap, obviously, with the G League. I'll say that till I'm blue in the face. I think it's great. I think there needs to be more of that. I would love to see that and see that overlap. I think that would be really cool. But I think that there are ways to do this that, like you said, where you can get some of these younger guys exposure, but also make it competitive and bring in the big names, bring in the guys that, you know, that people really want to see doing these contests, because there are people.
Yeah. Shaden is one of those guys you want to see. And I think he backed out of the dunk contest. This is entirely speculation, but like we've seen time and time again, players like Aaron Gordon and a lot of these players who participate in the dunk contest get kind of slighted because the judging is random. You never know who it is. And, you know, there was a year where it just so happened that one of the dunkers was good friends with one of the judges.
Right,
and you know, there's that sways the score. It's bias. So I think a lot of players will it's almost like a lose-lose. I mean,
yeah, because you don't want to be the guy that loses the competition. Yeah,
if you lose the competition, you get nothing, and you just kind of just – it brings your stock down. If you win, it looks very cool, but, like, your chances of winning are you never know. Right. So it's almost like – that's why LeBron originally refused to do the dunk competition. He just
– Right, because you don't want to be LeBron and lose to – no offense to Matt, because he's amazing, but you don't want to be LeBron James and lose to Mac McClung. Like that, for LeBron James, that's a smack to your ego.
Yeah, then everyone's having the GOAT debate again because he lost the dunk competition. So it's more like it's a risky situation.
Yeah.
High risk, little reward. So it's not a surprise that people don't want to participate. And we all know there are so many players that would absolutely put on the show of our lifetime if they were to participate in the dunk competition. But
it's an interesting thing, because you have, I think that's a big part of it. Honestly, I think a big part of it is that fear of being the guy that loses, and there's ego involved in that. Obviously, if you're somebody like LeBron, who has people constantly debating, you know, your achievements or lack thereof, losing a dunk contest just feeds into that narrative, and you may not want to do that. I've heard some interesting ideas for solutions to that, specifically for the All-Star game, which we're going to talk about as well. But one of the solutions that I heard, I wish I had saved the tweet because I don't know who said it now, but I saw somebody say that as a solution for the All-Star game, to get them to be more competitive, that the All-Star game should be truly East versus West. They shouldn't be allowed to swap, you know, over to different teams. Mm-hmm. And the winner of the game should have home court advantage in the finals. And I actually thought, you know what?
You're honest.
I
actually do like that.
For me, I
like the draft that they do, because it makes it look like, you know, just a more of a natural playground game. But at the same time, if you're playing for stakes, that's so much better than playing for. Because I mean, let's be honest, this All-Star game.
Let's talk this about year, it.
This was a layup line, in the words of Jaylen Brown. It was disgusting. It was
bad. It was just. The thing that I kept saying is, this is not a game. This is an exhibition. They're basically going out there, and you know, obviously, you don't want anybody getting hurt over a game that doesn't have any stakes to it at all. So guys aren't going out there and putting their bodies in the way where it's going to endanger their health. Obviously, I get that, but it was like it almost was like, okay, that guy has the ball. We're going to see what he does with it. Like there was very little defense, if any at all, like a lot of flashy moves that, you know, may or may not work out. It was just very half-hearted. Like lazy.
People just don't care. And also it's more like, you know, it's like going through the motions. People are just watching. But I remember not too long ago in 2020 when they had the All-Star game, and this was one of the few times in this era where I've seen an All-Star game get very competitive. And if you're watching, if you're listening, you can't see, but we're playing a clip from 2020. It's the last few minutes of the game. And if you recall, the game was a score off. It's the first team to 157. So towards the end, when they got closer to the score, that's a lot of points. But yeah, towards the end, all the starters came in and really played their hearts out. James Harden was out there playing defense. Players were fouling. Players were hustling for loose balls. It was like a finals type atmosphere, and players were really competing.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most competitive All-Star games I've seen, and I loved watching it. And like the last few minutes trying to get that last score was insane.
Yeah.
So that I would like to just see ways to incentivize players to compete, because that's what we want to see in an All-Star game. I'm also of the mind that players don't want to hurt themselves.
Right. And they shouldn't. You know,
it's a show. It's like, it's not something it would be really silly to get hurt during the All-Star game and then not be there for your team.
Right.
But at the same time, like, people pay a crazy amount of money to go to these All-Star games, and you want to give them some kind of show. So I think having that incentive, like you said, having the stakes really would make some of these players think, okay, you know what? Let's put the players who are going to want to play.
Right.
And that gives everybody something to play for.
I actually love that idea. One, I hate what they've done with it, where it's not the East versus West anymore, where they've just made two team captains and let everybody just, you know, go. I feel like that alone takes away some of the competitiveness, because I think that there is some kind of unspoken rivalry between the East and the West. And I think simply having those two teams divided that way immediately creates a level of competition, because you want your conference to be best. Like, you want to prove that you have the better players in your conference, because obviously, like, if your team is in the conference that's easier, like, you don't have as much, let's see, how am I want to say this? You want to be winning in the most difficult circumstances. That shows that you're the best. So obviously you want to be the conference that has the best players. You want to prove that. And I think that having the East versus the West truly does that. I also think that the idea of putting, you know, that's not home court advantage that's a big deal for the finals, obviously, for the championships. But I think that having that be something that everybody's kind of fighting for, like, that's fun. I like that. I like that idea a lot.
And I think there was a picture
of
this All-Star game, the 2023 All-Star game. And it's literally just a playground one-on-one match where all the players are just standing there, hands on hips.
Yeah. You
watching
can't see it if you're
two
not
players
watching.
go against each other. It was insane.
Yeah, we've got it up on the screen on our YouTube feed, but it's really is. You've got Adam can't even look at it. You've got two guys literally playing one on one, and you got, I don't know where the fifth guy from the LeBron's team even is.
Probably just on the other side of the court.
He's taking a nap or having a snack.
Yeah, but eating a hot dog.
You right. Know. Talking to the fans. But you've got three guys from one team, four guys from the other team, literally standing around. One guy has his hands on his hips. One guy, it looks like, is maybe clapping. I don't know. Like, it's just, it's, they're all just standing over there letting these two go at it. And it is kind of frustrating. You can see Dame is like working his way over. He's not totally giving up.
And it's like, these are some of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've seen that. I can go to the YMCA and see that. I don't, no one wants to really see that. You want to see these players compete. So NBA, please do something about the All-Star game.
Yeah. All of it. All of it just needs, I would love to just see a refresh. We don't have to keep things the way that they are. To me, if it's not working, change it. They haven't felt the need to do that. I mean, now all of a sudden we have a play-in tournament. We didn't have that a few years ago. So why are we keeping things the same when they're not working? You know, they keep making changes, like adding the draft right before, like, you know, mixing up the East and West. It's not like they've been afraid to make changes. So let's make changes that make it more competitive and more fun to watch and more entertaining. I would love to see some sort of incentive. And I don't know if that's home court or advantage or if it's something else, but figure it out, NBA. Get your act together. Mm. All right. So anything else you want to add about All-Star Weekend before we move on to our kind of last thing here?
No, I think the sooner we forget about All-Star, the better.
We've had it. Okay. So moving on. Let's talk about Damian Lillard. He is having a heck of a season starting in January. It's like, I think he's averaging almost 40 points a game. Dame has made it no secret that he is where he is, that he loves Portland. It has been a topic of conversation for literally years, and it seemed like voices had finally been silenced about it. But, you know, it can't be quite that easy. This is, I actually tweeted this and Adam sent it to me and said, we got to talk about this. This is a screenshot from Bleacher Report. They had an article that came out with 7 predictions for this season. And I said in the tweet, we finally had a season where people stopped questioning Damian Lillard's loyalty until we didn't. Bleacher Report is killing the vibes. So even like Sean Hyken, who's one of the reporters that covers the team, he talked about how they made it all the way through All-Star Weekend and nobody asked Damian Lillard about his loyalty. Everybody just kind of moved along. They knew he was in Portland. We've been over this. We didn't need to bring it up. And then Bleacher Report releases this 7 predictions for the season. And number 3 prediction is, and for the record, just to make it clear, these are predictions, not facts. But their 3rd prediction was that this will be Damian Lillard's final season with the Trailblazers. And I don't know about you, Adam, but I saw that and I kind of wanted to scream a little bit.
it's exhausting. It comes with being one of the few players that is still on your original team. And you know, I think Luka in a few years will get the same treatment. It's just players, fans want to see, not Blazers fans, but regular NBA fans want to see these players on the big, you know, big market teams.
Yeah.
And when they're not, they complain. Damian Lillard, I think in this case, one thing I want to bring up is that I think there's a very clear reason why Damian Lillard is staying in Portland. It's not just because he might like it or because the situation is good. It's just, if you look at the NBA in the past, I don't know, about 5-6 years, any point guard that has gotten traded or signed with a new team, it almost never goes well. There are other positions where, you know, players like shooting guards or any other position, players get traded and it's kind of like, you know, it's divided on whether or not their career goes up or down. But generally for point guards in the NBA, if you get traded to a team and you're a superstar, generally the next team you land on is a decline. It's a step back. We've seen it with James Harden. He went from being all world to all of a sudden being not talked about at all. And it's not like he just lost his talent. It's just he went to a situation that was not as good as his previous situation.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And we saw it with a lot of players. I think Kyrie, when he went to Boston, his stock went down. And then when he went to, you know, the Nets, that whole fiasco. But now Kyrie is in Dallas, and I think wait until, I don't know, a few games into the Dallas season, and if they lose a few games, the media is going to start demanding that Kyrie come off the bench. Yep. And that he's the problem. And that, that's what kind of happens to NBA point guards Russell when they go to other teams. Russell Westbrook
is another really good example.
It's not like he just lost all his talent the year before he took Washington to the playoffs. Well, and then he goes to the Lakers, and all of a sudden the media says he needs to come off the bench. And it's just, for point guards, it's not a great place to be in. John Wall went from being a 22-point per game with the Houston Rockets to sitting out and then coming off the bench.
Man,
I think it's hard out there for point guards, especially superstar point guards. So that's, I think really Damian Lillard is, I mean, it's in his best interest to stay in Portland unless, I don't know, towards the end of his career, if he really wanted a championship, you know, going and trying to make that happen somewhere where he trusts the entire organization, but just going and teaming up with a superstar, you know, for fun, that, for point guards, that's a dangerous business. That can end your career. Kyle Lowry went from being an all-star point guard to a, you know, it's very tough for NBA point guards.
I haven't really heard that talked about. That's a really interesting point that I have not heard. That is very true.
Yeah. And another one, Kimball Walker off the top of my head, went from being an all-star to coming off the bench.
Yeah. I don't think we've heard that really be talked about a lot. And I think, you know, you hit on a lot of things with that, but you also make another point that seems like a really obvious one. But when you're in a situation like Dame is, where you've got a franchise essentially behind you, you've got a front office who's willing to do the things. I know everybody's going to argue and say they're not, but they appear. And Dame's even said, as long as they're making moves to try to better the team and build around, you know, there's no guarantee. He could go to the best team. He could go to the Nuggets, which it pains me to say that even, but he could go to the Nuggets and there's no guarantee that they win a ring. Like, there's no guarantee. Yeah. There's literally no guarantees. And so why are you going to hop around from team to team hoping to find a good fit when you feel like you already have a good fit? Why not allow that team to do its thing around you instead of, and I think you made probably the best argument I've heard for him staying. That's the best argument I've heard. I haven't heard anybody talking about that, but that's a very good point. It also is really interesting because, again, on Chris Haynes' podcast, he spoke about a conversation he had with Kevin Garnett, who apparently called Dame and basically said, like, "Hey, I've been in your shoes. I've stayed with the same team, and eventually I moved. I finally like made the decision to leave and go to a different team. And it ended up being a great situation for me. It ended up being a great fit. And I wish I would have done it sooner." So he essentially was saying to Dame, like, "Don't make the same mistake that I did." And Dame's response as he's talking about this conversation was like, "I totally get why he did what he did, and I respect it. But like, we all have our own reasons for doing what we do." And it was really interesting to hear his response to that, where he's basically shooting down the idea of doing that. And I think it was once again just confirmation that that's not his plan. And now I think things can change. And I think if, you know, 2-3 years down the road, he feels like the team is stagnant and they're not willing to make moves and they're not willing to do things, then maybe he has a different conversation at that point and maybe things shift. But from everything he said, as long as the team is making moves and attempting to build a competitive team, he's willing to stick it out. And I think that there's a lot to be said about that. I think it's admirable to be loyal to the team, but I also think that exactly what you said, like, I think that part of the, because there's also a lot of narrative here where people are like, he deserves to go somewhere else. He deserves to win a ring. He deserves a chance. And it's like, first of all, he deserves to be where he wants to be.
Yeah.
So like, who are we to say what he deserves? Like, let the man make his own life choices. But second, like, it's not just like he's making some giant sacrifice for all of Portland. It's not that, like, he's not the savior here.
Yeah, he's,
like,
got the city is his oyster. I mean,
it's
a great situation to be
it
in.
Really
you're
is.
Celebrated. I mean, like,
yeah,
for me, I've always wondered why my father would leave a situation. He has a street named after
him. Me too, Adam. Me too.
And I mean, in his case, yeah, he had the team is. My father wanted to win above all else. That was the last thing for him to do was to win a championship. Yeah. After, you know, two of finals appearances, you know, wanting to win a championship. So he went and got one with his, one of his best friends.
Right.
In an organization that was 100% on board with him. Like it was the ideal situation.
And after Portland blew it up. And disassembled the team and basically said, we're starting over.
Yeah, then there's no team. And he's saying, okay, well, I can't win with this. The organization no longer wants to win.
Right.
So I happen to have a situation here where it's a slam dunk. You know, they just won a championship. I can go and try to repeat with my one of my best friends.
Right.
That's just like a dream situation. But Damian Lillard, I don't think he has like a best friend that's in the NBA, and you know there is no dream destination that could offer him what he wants without a high risk involved. And I think Portland is a city that loves him and appreciates him, that no one's rioting in the streets against Dame, and that's very difficult to leave unless you're guaranteed a championship. So,
which no one ever is. Well, and I think it's interesting, actually, the parallels that you bring up here, because one of the narratives that I see often is Blazers fans who are like, and this is also Blazers fans. This is not just other team fans who are saying like, free Dame, let him go somewhere else. Let him win a championship somewhere else. Let him go. Like, he deserves that. Like, he's played here for so long. He deserves a chance to go, you know, get a ring. And it's interesting because you bring up your dad, and I keep thinking about, that's not the narrative around him. People were pissed when he left. Like, people didn't say, like, he deserves to go try to win a ring somewhere else. Like, this is a very different narrative. So it makes me wonder, like, is it easy to just say, like, let him go. Let him go win a ring somewhere else. He deserves that chance. But when it comes down to it, would fans really be that accepting of it? Or would it be this whole, would it be a repeat of the way that a lot of fans are with how it ended with your dad?
Well, here's the thing that always trips me up. So let's say years down the road, Portland, you know, they can't get any superstars. They can't get any kind of crazy picks, and they don't have any good runs. So they decide to blow the team up. And Portland decides they're going to trade Damian Lillard and get some draft picks or get whatever and blow the team up. If you as a Portland fan, if that happens and you don't say anything, you're a part of the problem, because players get traded from the team all the time. But the second a player decides to leave of their own volition, fans can't stand it. I think that's kind of the double standard that we face with the NBA, is that fans are loyal to the team and fake kind of loyal to the players. My father loved the Trailblazers. He loved playing there. He took them to the finals twice.
Yeah.
And then, you know, no one's sitting there saying, okay, well, now he can go and win a ring with his best friend because our organization's not trying. No one got mad at the organization for doing that.
For it's not like building what he needed.
He didn't trade himself. He asked for a trade.
Right.
They could have said no.
Yeah.
No fans are running over there mad at the Trailblazers because they traded him. So I think that's the double standard. It's
if they had
traded him, would people have been mad?
Yeah. It's definitely different. It's a very interesting thing to look at, and just how have things shifted too, and like what narratives do we hear now because of social media, because of Twitter, because of the availability of these conversations versus what we heard then? Like, how different is that? And, you know, maybe it's time, you know, with the time that's passed, now people have had time to think about it and now they're bitter. I mean, I remember I just tweeted about this the other day because your dad got traded on Valentine's Day. And I said something about that being my first heartbreak as a child, because he got traded on Valentine's Day, and how sad that was. And I remember, yeah, I was 10 years old, and I was so sad about this happening. And I was so angry that this had happened. And I didn't understand at 10 years old, like, the way that this all worked. But I think, you know, in the moment, fans were so bummed that he wasn't part of the team anymore. But I think now that time has passed, you know, things shift in our brains, and the narratives change. And especially now that social media is such a thing, like, there's things that come out. But it's definitely interesting. You know, Dame and Clyde are two different players. They play different games. They play different roles with the team. They're often compared because I think they're obviously, you know, Clyde was a big superstar, and Dame now is a big superstar. Dame's now in the place where he's breaking a lot of those records and things like that, or getting close to it. So there are these conversations that are happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a natural thing to compare the two. I think you see parallels in your dad being drafted with the team and staying for so long, and then eventually doing what everybody's saying Dame should do. And I think that that's really an interesting parallel that I don't know why I haven't made that connection until now, but your dad made the decision that all these people are saying, well, Dame should do that. And then people were mad about it. So it makes me wonder what would actually happen if that
it is, it is weird. Cause I mean, to bring it up, DeMar DeRozan he put Toronto on the map. No one was expecting Toronto to be a good basketball team as DeMar DeRozan, you know, worked his way into being a powerhouse in the East with Toronto. And he's the greatest Raptor ever. And at the pinnacle of his career, at superstardom, they traded him for Kawhi Leonard. And no Toronto fans were mad about that, and they won a championship. So to me, I'm like, okay, let's say the Phoenix Suns, it doesn't work out. And then in the offseason, they trade Kevin Durant for Damian Lillard. Are Portland fans mad? If you aren't, you're part of the problem.
Some are. Some are mad. It's definitely an interesting – it's interesting. It's interesting to work through there, you know. There's a lot of emotion behind this. And I think at the end of the day, we all have to remember that this is a business. It's a business for the NBA. It's a business for the Trailblazers. It's a business for the players. The only people it's not a business for are the fans. and so for
and
us.
They're the ones that care the most.
Right. Man, it's interesting. We got to get your dad back on here and talk through some of this stuff with him.
He'd have an earful too.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, Adam, is there anything else you want to add to today's podcast?
No, that's all. I think summed it up. Such an uneventful All-Star weekend. This was...
This podcast
was more entertaining to me than most.
Yeah, we had a lot to talk about. It's we always do. We always have a lot to talk about. And every now and then we skip a week for whatever reason. And I feel like by the time we get back, I feel like you can tell when we've missed a week because our podcasts are a little bit longer. But as always, you know, we really appreciate all of you listening to our Blazer talk. I've really enjoyed doing this because a lot of times I kind of forget that we're recording and we just end up having a conversation, and those end up being my favorite. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Deandra Ann. Adam is at Drex Glides. And then the number 2, we always try to interact there. We pull tweets for the show regularly from there. So if you tweet directly at us, we may use that. I like to pull things that we see throughout the weeks, you know, pertaining to what we want to talk about. So jump on there, send us your, you know, your topics, things you want to talk about. Make sure you're subscribed, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening. Please subscribe, rate us if you like us. If you don't like us, just stay away from that. And, you know, comment, share, all that stuff. That's how we are able to keep this going. So we just really appreciate that. You know, social media is such a weird thing, but it can be so good. And if if the people who are listening to our podcast can retweet or post on your Instagram stories or whatever, like that's huge for us and for our engagement and our ability to do what we're doing. So thank you for that. Thank you for those of you who do that and interact with us and just for giving us an opportunity to talk about this team. So hopefully by the next time we're back, we've won a few more games. Maybe we're past, you know, 500 and
we can
and
hope
working our way up the ranks there. But thank you for listening. I hope that you've enjoyed this Shooting Hoops podcast. We will be back next week, hopefully with more. Have a good day, night, morning, whatever time you're listening to this. We'll see you next time.